I think I'd rather die in a nuclear war than go to Olean.
Penn State was in the Atlantic Panel.
You know what? You know what? Fuck the Lowell Spinners.
Good evening. I am recording this some 4 nights after the interview we conducted for this show. So a little bit of context. And this is Curry Hicksage, by the way, host of the UMass Basketball Podcast. I am joined tonight by my producer, or I will be joined by my producer on an audio we already recorded, the Bennett Carroll in our nation's capital, our one-time co-host, Andrew Kalagi, a.k.a. A. Kalagi for longtime listeners, will not be joining us tonight. Tonight's show is a special episode. I'm going to get into it all in the intro, which is quite long and a little bit rambly, but then it gets rolling, and I think it's kind of a fun one. This is not a basketball episode. We will have a thorough preview episode of the team, basketball team, within, I'd say, 7 to 10 days, maybe less. We're excited for that. This is a special episode, a bizarro world episode, in which we're joined by Fight Mass, the kind of ironic underbelly of UMass Twitter, and talking about, you know what, I'm not even going to tell you what we're talking about, but it just cut ahead if you want to really get into it. It's a bizarro and really fun episode. It's hockey related. That's all I'll say. Tonight's episode, of course, sponsored by the one, the only, Five College Movers, fivecollegemovers.com, stress-free moving in the Pioneer Valley and beyond. This particular episode could not be more related to moving, to going different places within the greater Northeast region, any of which could be accessed seamlessly by Five College Movers. Friends of the show, friends of UMass Athletics, if you're moving, if you're coming up to a game and you want to bring an elaborate tailgating spread, they'll probably do that for you. Five College Movers, check them out. Thorough, efficient, prompt, can't say enough good things about them.
So, it is at this time my... You know what? I'm not going to call this my distinct pleasure because while I am extraordinarily excited to have this guest on the show, the circumstances surrounding this appearance they're not ideal, and let me just tell the audience at the outset before I majorly buzzkill this. Number one, I don't know shit about the topic tonight. We'll get to that in a moment. I'm keeping it a little bit of a surprise, so I'm ill qualified to comment on it. But that could make for really good audio. So there's that. Number two, I'm violating my own self-imposed rule that I've set for this program, which is not to bring on people who ask to be brought on. Number three, I found out, actually, I sort of was like a little bit of a Mr. Nice Guy, and I volunteer as a person who does a certain task in my office every morning at like 5 a.m., and this individual is away, and I sort of felt bad because my colleagues were handling it. I usually go in a little later and work later. And so I was like, oh, I can like do that from home if you need. And now like I got roped into this thing that I have to do at 4:30 in the morning, and it's going to take me like 3 hours and be super stressful. And it's currently 9:42 on Wednesday night as we record this, Wednesday, October 16th. So the circumstances are not ideal, but let's go on the flip side. And this is probably the longest intro we've ever done. This person is genuinely funny and is part of at one time, duo of two people who were really funny. They have unique insight into the topic. I have enjoyed their content on UMass Twitter and elsewhere in their earlier blogging days a great deal for a long time. And so if anyone is kind of owed an appearance on this program, particularly in unconventional fashion, it is this individual. And I think that my unique lack of preparation tonight may, even by my own standards, may actually be well suited to this topic in particular, because my job on this particular episode is just to speculate, endless speculation. I have theories and very hazy ideas of what we're talking about, but I think that will make for better content. And so without further ado, tonight's guest, this is a long-winded way of saying that tonight's guest on the Five College Movers sponsored UMass basketball podcast, which is a very fitting sponsor for tonight's topic, because tonight's guest from the one-time blog and still Twitter syndicate Fight Mass of the same name is one half of that duo, really the only half on that account these days, it sounds like, Max Bitter of Leominster, Mass, who now lives in Salem, Mass. Is that right?
That's correct. Which Max, is hell right now because it's October.
Now, Max is, if I'm not mistaken, a 2010 UMass graduate. He holds the distinct titles of blogger, former UMass athletics blogger. He is big on, if they're UMass Twitter, small as it is still split into sub Twitters. And if we're going super niche, Max is very big on UMass brewery Twitter, which is people who talk about beer. I don't particularly like them. I don't like the topic. Because I'm mostly because I'm insecure and I don't know a lot about beer. And then any other spheres, you're kind of like weird UMass Twitter, I would say, is definitely your lane. And then carry on.
I was going to say, like, UMass Twitter is kind of already weird Twitter to begin with. It's considerably more niche.
I wrestle with this because weird Twitter, if you don't know what it is, and it's not just weird people on Twitter, is a thing. So if you're one of our, let's say, 42 and up listeners, this is probably not even going to be a good episode for you. So, but
yeah, just shut it off now.
Log off. Sign off. No, that's it. Like 47 and up. So weird Twitter is a real thing. You can Google it. It's a certain affect, a certain tone, vibe. I struggle with it because, and what I respect about you guys at Fight Mass is I'm a little bit of a sellout. Like, I can't just stay in that kind of world on UMass Athletics Twitter because it's so niche, and I'm admittedly a little bit of a narcissist, so I need the satisfaction of talking to normie UMass Twitter.
I was going to say Twitter. Normie UMass Twitter.
So normie UMass Twitter, just for the folks, it's pretty obvious. It's sort of just normal, regular people. And then some of it is
give or take.
But like, they're not actually normal. They're actually the weird ones. Now, and some of that is born of my own psychology where like, I like people of all types. Like, so it's not purely sellout, but you and really your co-partner, Max, if I'm allowed to identify him, or can I say, what's the rule on that?
You can call him Matt, and it's blind spots.
Sorry, did I say your handle? Max? Did I say, okay.
Yeah, so you called, spots. Yeah, this happens more often than you think. There actually used to be, a little funny Fight Mass backstory, there actually used to be three of us. We're all obviously really close friends. You may have seen him as at The Ice Is Life on Twitter. Derek, and he's no longer part of Fight Mass. He's kind of like, he's done what we all need to do and deleted Twitter altogether. So more power to him.
I disagree with that assertion. Once you have a kid, Twitter, my take on Twitter is it actually serves more of a function because like you genuinely have a reason to be sitting alone on a Saturday night because your child care is really expensive or like you're tired and so you don't want to go out. So you actually have like Twitter actually serves a real utility. But anyway, back to this kind of like pop sociology take on the spheres of UMass Twitter. You guys, particularly your partner, have maintained I think through all your years now, I mean, it's been close to a decade since Fight Mass launched, right?
That's correct. Very good. We're coming up on 10 years, which makes me feel very sad.
10 years. But of course, the website itself, the blog spot or whatever it was, has probably been barren for like at least six, right?
Yeah, the WordPress, I think, shut down. I think we kind of stopped trying.
Didn't renew the domain name?
No, we didn't. We actually did have fightmass.com. And I remember the day I created that website, Mark, if you're the triangle, it was like, well, congratulations, you are now a fan operating at a loss. So, it was fun for a while. I drifted more towards the Twitter thing when I realized that nobody was reading the blog, and it's a lot of work. Ask him, ask anyone who blogs. It's, you put a lot of time and effort into writing this stuff, and then nobody reads it.
Blogging as a medium is tough because it's like, now if you want to just, say shit, you can do it on Twitter and do a threaded, tweet storm
anyway,
get real time reaction and do polls and all sorts of fun shit.
And both funny memes and GIFs and whatever. So yeah, it's much more conducive to the style of what we want to be. I think we've kind of evolved to. I mean, when we started Fight Mass, it was more like a serious fan blog that was meant to be like snarky and sarcastic, but also representative of the student population at the time and our fandom and all that. And it kind of evolved into like you said, weird Twitter, where we're much more irreverent, sometimes we'll throw some leftist politics in there here and there. We'll throw the beer stuff in there and really we've stopped taking ourselves so seriously is kind of the moral of the story there.
Well, the thing I respect about that though is that you guys are committed to that affect pretty much at all times, whereas I will admittedly be a little schizophrenic and kind of go toward like legitimate analysis and then like jump back into weird Twitter with responses. And I think that it works for me, but I just admire the kind of voice that you guys have cultivated and the fact that it was at least for a while two of you and no one knew who was saying what was always a particularly fun element of it.
Definitely. Especially when I get tweets back at me on tweets I don't remember posting and have to put out firestorms. That's a lot of fun.
But the funny part, though, is that sometimes I think I've talked about it on the show once before. And by the way, just so everyone knows, there is going to be a theme tonight, and I'm going to get to that in a second.
And this isn't it.
This is not it. And this is a long-ass intro, so Bennett, maybe in the notes, be like, to get to the actual theme of tonight's show, skip to minute 13 or whatever it is. But
talk about guys' grocery games. Go on.
Wait, and so what was I? Where was I going before I just went off on that? I find it. Oh, so somebody once said, an internet sort of person that I like a lot once made the point that the internet used to exist in this world where this is like 10, 12 years ago, where everybody would kind of have like their niche message board or whatever thing they were into. And they would develop a whole language and a whole way of talking and all these weird jokes and basically memes and all sorts of things that, weren't named at the time. And then over the last decade or so, all of those sort of sites have migrated to like three or four sites, particularly Twitter. And so what happened was, I just think this is like the most spot on analysis I've ever heard of like basically like how the internet like broke. And it's that all of a sudden people who are into completely different shit were migrating toward the same platform. And so they literally didn't speak the same languages. I mean, yeah, it was English, right? But it's like, so if you're weird Twitter and then you're like normie Twitter, but you're kind of, and it's a Venn diagram, and the middle is like UMass Twitter. Well, there is inevitably going to be times where, a lot of times, people on those two spectrums who have no similarities in like voice or like style or affect or politics or just the way of understanding the world more broadly, but they both share a niche interest in one topic, have no way to fucking talk to each other. Because like that's what the message board did. It created I don't just mean like the UMass Hoops message board. I just mean like message boards or like weird blogs served that corner of the, you know, like served to like meld a language for people of otherwise disparate backgrounds. And so sometimes I feel, and maybe it's like a little, I don't know, like paternalistic or some shit, but I feel like, you know what? I want everybody to get along to some degree, and I'm going to kind of step in here and like do a little bit of translating. So like with the UMass Moose joke recently, you guys just went with it and it was great. And like I was too for a while, but then I realized like there are a whole lot of people who just fucking didn't get it. Like they just weren't in on that like, and I didn't want to be a dick about it. Cause it's like, but I also didn't, you know, so I was like, so I just put up a tweet, which I ended up pinning, where I was like, all right, I'm going to explain this once. It's funny. Here's why. If you don't get it, like you don't get it, but at least I'll give you one chance. And like, I felt like I owed it to like the like peace, you know, to keep the peace between, you know, people who may have been in on the original joke and had a certain orientation or affect or like way of talking online and the other people on the other side. So that's a little bit of an academic overview of how Fight Mass exists in the broader ecosystem that is UMass Twitter, but I think it should set the backdrop. And if you find those people insufferable or annoying, I don't mean you two, but I mean people who have that affect, I guess this isn't going to be your episode. So now, with all that precursor out of the way, tonight's episode is about a very specific topic. This is a very niche show. The Fight Mass...
Yeah, I would say so.
The Fight Mass bloggers and tweeters are big UMass hockey fans. As anyone who listens to the show regularly knows, I'm not... well, now I pretend to be. That's actually a good example, like me pretending to be a UMass hockey fan. Like, some people just didn't get that. most people did. So, I'm not a big UMass hockey fan. I've gone to a few games over the years. I have not gone to any other Hockey East venues, or maybe I've been to some venues, but not for even a UMass game. I've been to hockey games at a few ECAC venues, long story short. Tonight's topic is about where the best place to watch a hockey game is in Hockey East, because Max and Matt of Fight Mass have at this point been to all 11 venues. Is it 11, by the way?
It's 11. We've also been out to Notre Dame, which is no longer part of Hockey East, but we made that trip a few years back for my birthday and saw a rare UMass victory at the time. We were not there for the longest college hockey game ever played, which was between us and Notre Dame a couple years back, but we were...
What year was that at this point? 2015?
I think so.
So I think the one thing I wish so badly that the Atlantic 10 had that Hockey East does is, I've said this on the show a number of times, Hockey East represents this perfect regional conference. It's like mostly peer schools who, you know, there's tiers for sure, both like athletically, academically, kind of culturally, but more or less it's like everybody in Hockey East kind of knows people at the other Hockey East schools. And whereas I love the A-10 and its kind of weirdness, there's very little that kind of intuitively connects the member institutions. And Hockey East represents this just perfect kind of throwback creation of schools that just should be there intuitively. And as a result, it allows fans to travel pretty easily to opposing arenas and kind of get a sense of the fan culture at all these places. And I also think college hockey in particular lends itself to like the kind of show we're about to have tonight. I was just telling my dad about the topic of tonight's show and he couldn't name one player who's ever played hockey at UMass. And he was just like, what the fuck? He's like, that is
not
the
one
most niche. No, he couldn't. He definitely could not name one. I mean, he could not name one guy in the NHL right now. He could name like Wayne Gretzky.
Oh, okay.
He could name like probably some like New York Rangers goalie from like the 60s. And that's about it if I had to guess. But anyway, I mean, he took me to a UMass hockey game or two when I was a kid. And he did actually like taking me to Springfield Indians games. Now the Falcons, or now there's something else, Thunderbirds. So when I was a little kid, they were the Indians. And like, it was really weird because my dad's a really zen dude and like very chill and like laid back, really cool guy. And like, when there was a minor league hockey fight in like 1991, some of my earliest memories at the old Springfield Civic Center, like my dad, who fucking like has been meditating before it was cool for like 50 years, like long before it was like hip, just to like chill out, would hop out of his seat and just like get like fired up for a hockey fight. Like, it was like distinct memories of my dad, like, who normally like, I think he used to fight a lot as a kid, so he kind of like had that primal thing in him, and then he zenned out. I should probably examine his psychology, but like he sort of zenned out later in life, and that was like, that must have brought something back, because he loved, and minor league hockey fights are kind of fucking awesome, like objectively, like it's just, they're fun. So those are my hockey memories of my dad. But when I told him about tonight's show, he was like, holy shit, like who is gonna listen to that, you know? And I'm like, no, he didn't even mean it rudely. Like but I was like, you know, actually, I have this weird feeling that because the Hockey East community itself is like such a quirky, sort of fun, offbeat orbit, like they actually will probably, and there's like less day-to-day reporting on it than some other things, they will probably actually tune into this episode with a vigor that we don't even get for some of our more listened to episodes about UMass basketball. You think there's any truth to that?
I mean, I certainly hope so, because otherwise nobody's gonna listen to it. No, I'm down for, you know, the crossover appeal here. I will casually point out that hockey probably outdraws basketball and football combined right now at UMass.
Certainly among students, for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And that's what it is. It's about students. I mean, the reason this topic's near and dear to me is because as we get into the season, I think part of being a UMass hockey fan in particular, as you mentioned, is the ease of access to these road games. I mean, you know, we love the basketball team, but I've only ever been to the Ryan Center.
No, you met me at Fordham, dude.
Oh, in Fordham, that's right. okay, so that's two, though, out of the conference.
And I've only been getting out five. To the games.
Yeah, so, yeah, and if anyone would have been to more road games, it's you. So I think that's one of the coolest things about being a UMass hockey fan is how easy it is to get out to these games. They're, you know, almost all on weekends. You're never more than about like a three and a half hour drive from any of the venues, and that's Maine, and that's a whole other experience altogether, or Vermont. So, I mean, it's one of those things that really hooked me on being a fan, is getting not just to pack the Mullen Center every game, but getting to go out on these road trips and bonding with friends and, you know, eventually meeting other diehards like Mark and his friends there, the Section U people. And I wanted to put together this tier list and this guide for people who haven't done a road game to know where's the better places to go. And I'll just start off and say, like, even the worst arena in Hockey East is worth going to visit. I'm not going to be trashing these arenas and saying, like, never ever go there. But there is definitely a pecking order. So if you can only go to one, definitely, you know, we'll get to the top of the tiers.
I'm going to get to that in a sec. But the thing that strikes me that's as really compelling and unique about Hockey East in particular is, I think of it, and again, I have absolutely no idea, so please correct me if I'm wrong. I think of it as kind of like the fourth or fifth division in like British soccer, where like all of the teams are, in terms of like its role in the broader like American sports psyche, its fans are really passionate, and they all have like really unique arenas, and in a given year, one or two will be kind of nationally relevant at a given time. And so, and they're always vying, one or two or three or four even are vying for that. And each arena, because of the nature of the sport and it not being a huge revenue driver for schools, allows for each arena to be kind of its own quirky thing. And, you know, a lot of the basketball gyms that are built now are, you know, like Gamble Pavilion and the Mullen Center are pretty similar type venue. You know what I mean? Like there's a certain homogeneity to a lot. Like you still have it with the A10 for sure and Fordham, and there's, you know, cool venues. But with other sports, I mean, certainly at the pro level, most of these stadiums are just cookie cutter creation, you know, with slight quirks on the side. But Hockey East like maintains, you know, the, it's not about sucking everyone dry of their dollars, and it's like it maintains a real character that is very unique in the American like sporting scene. You think that's a fair assessment?
Absolutely. And I think that's what makes it so special, is the fact that none of these arenas could be looked at as like particularly generic. Like they all have their own unique character. They all have their traditions, chants, which is a timely topic of discussion right now, and just the way that they're all like historically significant in one way or another, it really just lends itself to each being kind of a really cool experience, frankly. So,
and last point before we get into it, someone once said, and I forget who, but it was so on point. They said, you know, obviously being a little hyperbolic, but they said, there's no such thing as a casual hockey fan. And obviously there are a great deal of them at UMass, particularly among the student population. Yep. Although I think that a lot of those people are now becoming more avid because of the success. But the reality is like, if you go, to, I mean, when I, in New York, when I go to Penn Station on the night of a Ranger game, I'm always like, cause I don't, you know, I'm not a hockey guy, so I don't know a ton of people who care about, I couldn't tell you, like, I don't know anyone of my, I have one or two friends who are serious hockey fans. But you go to the Ranger game and every single, you go to a Knick game, and it's like people are just, it's like a, it's a scene and you have diehard fans. But you go to Madison Square or to Penn Station by Madison Square Garden for a Ranger game night, 96% of the people are wearing jerseys. Like there is no such, and it is probably reflected in the number of the proportion of tickets that are season tickets versus regular. I mean, the people who care about their hockey teams. And it's reflected in the TV ratings. Like the TV ratings are basically dog shit. I mean, they've gotten better a little in certain instances, but people are so committed to actually like going to the games, and so I would imagine that lends itself to a grudging respect even for some of the opposing fans because there's an appreciation for the sport.
Absolutely, yeah. I definitely think that's one of the things that's really cool too is just how much I think we all there's so many rivalries that result from the geographic proximity between these schools, and yeah, you, at the end of the day, you're right. You're gonna walk out of that arena and look around and be like, these people all also give a shit about college hockey. And as much as I hate that he's wearing a BC jersey, like, you know, at the end of the day, we all love the same sport, you know.
Yeah, and so there's only like sort of camaraderie. Like 60 or 65 schools in the country that have Division I hockey. So it's like you're kind of all part of a unique club. All right,
It's a small club, and we're all part of it.
I'm gonna start and tell me if this is okay to do it. Mm-hmm. The way I thought would be funny would be, and that's really what we prize on the program, is I was going to start guessing like my order and then going like 11, 10, 9 with you point by point to see if I can guess the order.
Love it.
So, all right. 11. Definitely. And just if you could, because my answer may change a little bit, but I'm totally going off the top here. Give me the core like criteria you're using to form the methodology that goes into this. Like, should I be thinking of quirkiness, comfort, you know, beer selection? Like, what are the things I should be assessing? Because, like, I, for example, I was going to say, and don't tell me if this was yours, but I was going to say Merrimack almost certainly has to be the biggest dump in the league. But there, I saw the other day on Twitter, like, a fucking lamp fell during the middle of the game. And like that automatically for me is like a quirky enough trait that I kind of respect it. So I may not put it 11. So just tell me, because I'm trying to sort of echo your method when I'm guessing the or if you prefer, I can just do it based on like my own totally weird rankings. Which would you prefer?
I like what you're getting at there. I think that's a fun idea. And I think we're probably criteria wise. You got me. You threw me off there because all I could think about now is the scoreboard falling down at McGurk. But
like that's a strength to me.
Yeah, we can relate to that. It's kind of all of the above, really. I mean, quirkiness is one of the big criteria for me for sure. But I've already done this tier list, and I actually tweeted it out several months ago, and that's kind of what gave me the idea to beg to be on your podcast. But I've rated them really based on, you know, tradition, how, you know, the atmosphere in the arena, seats we could really give a shit less about. It's not like any of them are uncomfortable in the sense that people are talking about the TD Garden right now. Right. So it's more about the student atmosphere, the band, of course. And then one of the other things is the place where it's located. So like, obviously, if you're going to make one of these road trips, you're not just going to go to the game and then leave.
Right.
You want to pregame, you want to check out restaurants, you want to check out bars, breweries where they're applicable, which is everywhere now because it's 2019. But, you know, some of these places are still destinations for not just the game, but also everything that goes into the trip. Right. So those are my criteria.
So then in that case... Mm-hmm. I'm still going to say Merrimack is probably 11.
Yeah. So my tier list, and I did it the way that like everybody does these like video game tier lists.
But we got to do 11, like 10, S3E. 9.
Oh, but no, they're numbered. They're definitely numbered too.
Okay.
So like I have a bottom tier, E tier, and then they are also ordered within the tier. So
right,
it's so the bottom of the barrel.
Okay.
Merrimack College.
Right, so tell me
11.
how many are in your, so they're the bottom. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
How many are in the bottom tier total? I just want to make sure I can guess.
There's two in the bottom tier.
Okay, so I would say they are in the bottom. And then the second... Let me just make sure I have a list of Hockey East teams in front of me. Because the ones I'm leaning toward, as I think out loud here, and again, this is very ill-informed, but I would think Conti Forum is like a weird one because it's like, It should be so much better. They've won national titles, but that place is just like a dead zone a lot of the time. And yet it is in Boston. They still have a lot of tradition. So like, I don't think I can, as much as I want to, I don't think I can quite go that, say that's the last one.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm inclined to say would be UMass Lowell. But then I've heard that like people, there's like kind of a cool brewery scene in Lowell, I feel like now, and it's a nice arena and they have good beer selection in the arena. So I don't think I'm going to go with that one either. I feel like the Whitmore Center, if that's what it's called at UNH, used to be good, but now it's like they haven't been as good. And it's kind of like, it just feels very vanilla. Like I feel like the Whitmore Center, when I think of the Whitmore Center, I think of like a Mitt Romney campaign rally. It has that kind of energy. Circa like 2012.
It.
That's like the energy I think of. But there's got to be another school I'm not even thinking about. Like, Providence has to be respectable, middle tier. Aganis is, like, a nice place. I've been there for a hoops game. It's a nice enough place in a good location that you can't count it off. I know you guys love Northeastern. Can you just name the other school? So Maine is the one that could go either way. Because I feel like Maine is just – it's just bizarro world. Like, that's children of the corn shit. But that there's like mm-hmm. an unbelievable fan base in almost a kind of creepy way that you have to respect. But there's nothing up there. And Maine, if I'm not mistaken, hasn't been as good at hockey in recent years.
This is really funny to listen to, actually. I'm enjoying this.
Are there any other schools I'm missing? Like, who else am I missing in terms of school member schools?
You're missing
Bennett,
UConn?
That? Oh, UConn is now in Hockey East.
That's
okay.
Right.
So it's definitely UConn, and it's definitely UConn because like they play in Hartford, and the place seats like 16,000 people, and I know they have their whole like ice bus and some fun quirks, but there's no way that place can get consistently rocking, especially with them not having been good. So I'm going to say UConn is in that bottom tier with Merrimack. Am I correct?
So no, actually, but you're on kind of the right track with this. I think you're putting things for the most part towards where they are on the list. So we'll walk through to get to that point. I want to say might be some Merrimack real quick. It is last in the league. It's the worst. Places we call it University of Sears Arena because it looks like you're in a converted department store. The ceilings are so low. It's basically like a high school hockey rink. It's not, there's no bells or whistles. The concourse is like cheap and shitty, and there's like one food stand. The only redeeming factors for Merrimack is their students are actually loud. It does get loud, LOWD, in there. And
shouts to Dayton basketball.
Shout out to Sully,
my good name.
Like you said, a lamp fell, so there's that.
Like, that's my energy. Weird. Like, that is my mood.
It's so weird. There's like all these like weird, like creepy windows in the corners, and like they have one banner that has all of the like teams in Hockey East on it because they don't have room to put up individual ones for everyone.
It's LaSalle energy, is what it is.
Yeah, it's 100% LaSalle energy. It's we've also watched UMass lose an 11-1 hockey game there, where it got so bad that our third string goalie came in, and it was
Kevin Glenn, right?
Was it Micheletto, or was I think it was the beginning of the Micheletto era. Either that or it's the tail end of the Toot era. It's all one big shitty blur to me at this point. But
they had like one or two great years at Merrimack, right?
They did. They got really good for no particular reason other than I think they had some good recruiting. They brought in I'm having a huge mental cramp here, but when a coach who came from UMass. And then they unceremoniously fired him last year, and have been paying the price for it ever since.
Why did they fire
him? After the initial success, he kind of tailed off a little bit. But
I'm going to say me too. It was a me too.
It was a me too. They found some canceled tweets. No, they tailed off, and it's like, but you're Merrimack still. So like being a 500 team doesn't mean like your coach is a failure. Like, be glad that you are where you are. I don't know. And the school, like the school's nothing to write home about. It's North Andover. There's no anything to do there. It's kind of convenient, I guess, but that's not worth the trip if you can only do one trip.
If I'm not mistaken, former UMass podcast host, Callagy, AKA A. Kalagi, for longtime listener, is a North Andover native, but it might be Andover, and I'm sure people from those towns would get upset about that. But I'm a Western Mass kid, so I don't really care. Keep going.
If anything, he would then be able to understand that there's no reason to go out of your way to go to North Andover.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. So who's your second one? Because I'm saying UConn.
My second E-tier school is Providence, actually.
Really?
Schneider Arena. Yeah, and I got into it with Chris Ingerson, a.k.a. formerly ZooMass, on Twitter, because now he lives in Providence, it. And he says the city's on the up and up. So, full disclosure,
I'm a big Providence guy as a city. I can't speak to the arena.
Okay.
I will make a big case for Providence. I think there's, like, great... So, for my criteria for a city, great Italian food, walkability... some college town atmosphere, which they definitely have because they've got PC, RISD, Brown, a little bit of an art scene, but like not gratuitously, like, you know, over the top artsy. And Providence has that with just enough grit to make it like a real city. Obviously, given like size of the city, it's like it's going to be like up against some things because it's just like any city under a certain number of people is like always a challenge. But I think, and also, and the ocean, nearby the ocean. So, like, obviously that's not relevant during hockey season. But Providence, like, to me, there's some good shit in Providence.
Yeah, and I needed to give it another chance since they've renovated it. this is one of those few arenas that actually has like obstructed view seats. I think they still have this with where like there's certain seats where you just can't sit or the railing is blocking your view of the whole ice. It's in kind of not the best neighborhood. Parking, I guess, has become like a complete pain. You don't get the whole like city vibe.
Is it on campus?
It is. It's on like the outskirts of campus, though, and it, like you take a few steps and you're in kind of a dodgy neighborhood.
Yeah, that's not great. Because like the Hoops team, also, I would imagine Hoops is so the priority at Providence.
100%. And even though Providence, obviously, big success over the last few years, they were in the Frozen Four too.
And they lured
championship a few years back.
And didn't they lure the guy who either won a national title or took Union really deep, and then they lured him to Providence? Nate Lehman or whatever?
Yeah, that's his name.
I know some college hockey. You don't sleep.
Yeah, so there you go. They
pay coaches, right, or whatever.
Oh, yeah. But despite their success, the atmosphere in that arena is still not great. The students aren't really that into it. They don't draw that well. Maybe that's changed in very recent years, but even I feel like during their recent runs, you watch the games on TV and the place is half empty, and it's just the arena is nothing special. There's like the noise of like air compressors in the background. And their fight song is freaking boring as hell. So,
and there's only like, it only seats like 3,000, right? It's fairly small.
Yeah, it's pretty small. Honestly, so I feel like.
Yeah.
The Dunk would be a better choice, but obviously it's not.
No, too big. Too big for college hockey.
Well, the XL Center, which we'll get to shortly.
I mean, it is interesting, though, because I think like Big East basketball at Georgetown, at Providence, and at a couple other places has this unique ability to transcend just the life of the campus. And college hockey mm-hmm. kind of strikes me as being something that, like, it's always going to be a campus product, and I don't even mean just literally on the campus, but it's not a big enough sport nationally that you can throw, because remember, Providence says, don't they have the Bruins affiliate?
They do, yeah, the P-Bruins.
So like the town vibe is always going to probably fuck with that, and so if you're a college hockey team in a minor league hockey town with a huge basketball program, like it almost like makes sense, like you're definitely going to play third fiddle, and then you're just dealing with kind of like rich kids who like, you know, they'll show up for like a BC game on a Friday night, I'm sure. But if they're playing like, you know, UMass on a Tuesday, they're just going to, you know, think they have better things to do. They're going to watch the Celtics or whatever they do.
Yeah, 100%. And okay. Like that, there's definitely reasons why that all is, but that doesn't make it any better of a place to see a game. So,
all right, fair enough.
Yeah, so solidly E tier.
Okay, so next tier has how many teams in it?
Just one. So D tier is one school, one arena.
Wow.
You've already mentioned it.
I would think Lowell.
No. So UNH, as you mentioned.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mitt Romney Energy 2012 campaign.
Mitt Romney Energy. It's so Lake Witt, as they call it, Whittemore Center, has the biggest ice in Hockey East, and that's kind of the only thing it's got going for it, honestly. Like, it used to be, you know, back in the glory days when UNH actually used to be good, the students were some of the most rowdy in all the league.
Yeah, I remember that place was loud. They'd have, like, whiteouts, I feel like.
And they still try, but then it's sad because nobody shows up. They still have, like, the traditions where, the band is into it, and they still throw the fish on the ice when they score their first goal. But the arena has not kept up. It's kind of ugly.
It's very generic, if I recall. Yeah, like the look of it.
It's quite generic.
Just drab and
So the one thing it does have going for it, and this is a big plus in the Fight Mask column, is the open concourse where you can walk around the outside of the arena and watch the game as it's happening.
Oh, that's chill.
Where you can stand in the concourse because there's never anyone behind you. So those are pluses. And Durham is becoming, like, the campus is not, you know, anything really to write home about, but there are more beer options near there. You can stop at Stoneface, you can go into Portsmouth, but the city itself of Durham, there's nothing going on.
How far is Portsmouth from Durham?
like probably like 15, 20 minutes.
Oh, okay. Cause one of my good friends moved to Portsmouth and maybe that could, I mean, I'm not going to go up there for a UMass hockey game anytime soon with a second kid on the way, but like
someday.
All right. So UNH is in that tier D. So, I would have,
by the way, there's,
I
was going to say that, that because this is a video game style tier list, there is a C, B, A, and then there's an S tier, and S tier is like number one. It's the best at the top. Don't ask
I'm
me.
Not a, I'm not
sense.
A gamer, so I don't,
Yeah, I know.
I don't know what that means. No, a lot of people are.
S is short for special, Sage.
Is that, is
it's
that
short, it's short for Sage, actually.
Okay, perfect. I know all about
Sage
that.
Tier.
Terrific.
Yeah.
The Sage tier. I know all about that. We, that could become a recurring theme on just like anytime I really like Carl Pierre, he's in my Sage tier.
Love it.
So, okay, so the next tier, how many people, how many teams in it?
All right, so C list, there are C tier, there are two more schools. Okay. And you've already mentioned both of them. I think
so
you mentioned all of them at this
it's
point.
It's got to be Lowell and UConn for you. I probably would have flopped UConn and Providence just because I think Providence is, and I might have frankly put Providence above UNH too. And I say this as someone who's highly informed and has been to none of these arenas. But
no, but I will give Providence another chance.
I'm going to say, well, I also feel like they were Frozen Four team last year. So if you catch like a UMass game there on Friday night and kind of do some Providence things a little farther off campus, that could be a meaningful evening. But okay, I'm going to say, go ahead.
I was going to say, you're one for two. In this tier, so you're right. UConn's next, so I have.
So you're
UConn
really with, a fucking Lowell guy. That's weird. Okay, so who's the other one?
So BC is after them.
That makes sense.
So yeah, eight is UConn, which is actually I was pleasantly surprised at the atmosphere in there because my expectation was as low as you could possibly go. I had never obviously been to XL Center for a basketball game because they won't play us. But the hockey atmosphere is much better than expected. The arena is nicer. There's more amenities than I was thinking they would have, I guess, because they renovated it recently. Yeah, I knew it was big, but I didn't realize they'd renovated recently, too. And honestly, it's, you know, there's things to do. It's Hartford. There's, you know, it's not going to get any higher than C tier. I mean, until they, like, start winning games and fill that place up.
I'm going to have to rank it really low just because I called a game there once and they stuck us in the rafters. And let me tell you, we had to do the catwalks to get over to our little broadcast booth. So for that, they're definitely the worst for me.
Dude, also, that place is insanely steep.
Yeah. We were like, it was legit 90 degree angle down to actually.
Yeah, it's wild. Like, I remember going to a Bruce Springsteen concert there in like when I was like 16, and it was like alarmingly steep.
Well, a good thing though is it's for hockey that they don't really have the upper sections open, so you can get pretty close.
That's smart. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and so your seats end up being pretty good.
Oh,
it's
that
also
changes the dynamic. I'm a big proponent of that. Right. I think they should do that at the Mullen Center, by the way.
Yeah, I agree. But what can you
cut out? Cut out 3,000 seats. Like, fuck it. Who cares?
Right. I mean, you know, that's another tradition we're probably stamping on. One other quick thing on UConn, currently I think the closest Hockey East venue to Treehouse Brewery. So that's a huge plus coming down.
Fair enough.
Southern Mass.
I think Hartford's a dump, but whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was more because based on my expectations, it did better. So you're right. I'll probably flip it with Providence when I finally get back there. BC I have next. They are number seven. Just a nothing arena.
How I would describe it.
It's actually kind of very similar to the Mullen Center, except without any of the atmosphere or character. I obviously am biased as a hater of all things Boston College, but I think, I mean, they have their goal song is fun. They have, you know, they have the band. Those things are actually okay, but they don't draw. You know, students don't show up for games. I mean, we went there last year. It was, I think, 75% UMass fans, which is awesome and actually helps get it ranked.
Was it
higher.
That much? That's wild.
It felt like 70-30 at least. And that, again, it's because their fans don't come to games unless it's against BU or somebody ranked, you know, above them, which is everyone now, except not this year. But last year they were pretty bad. But there are things that are good about BC that, you know, Justin Hill is reasonably easy for a lot of us Eastern Mass people to get to. They do have a convenient garage. Parking situation is actually not bad at all. And, you know, there's some good bars and restaurants. It's near Public House, which is an amazing Belgian beer restaurant right down the street. So there are some pros to it, but it's definitely an average arena compared to some of the ones ahead of it.
So in that same tier, maybe slightly below it, I'm going to maybe alienate the fans of this program and put UMass like firmly in the sort of like middle of the pack tier last year, notwithstanding. I think UMass, my sense is UMass hockey fan culture took like a giant leap forward last year, and that kind of this like long extant like critical mass of serious fans, sort of jersey wearing fans, if you will, was expanded in number. And it was fascinating to me to like watch. It's kind of like after a World Cup, all of a sudden like you see all these people and they're like, oh yeah, I've always been an Everton fan. And you're like, what? Like, were you? Like, but they I guess they were, because it's not just like the Johnny come latelys. Like some of them, you have some of that, but you have some people who are like, maybe they were just quieter before, but I feel like there is now, and I've heard like just factually, there's been like some crazy, it's like they tripled the number of season ticket holders. Like, and I imagine a lot of those people are kind of the people who are like going to three or four games anyway. So
yeah.
I think you combine that with like this huge student interest, and they're like, they're getting to a place where if they sustain this for two more seasons, they will have like a critical mass of diehards, the same way that basketball did in the mid to late 90s, that just kind of stayed there for 5, 6, 7 years after that. And like, you know, then they'd come back when the team got good in the early aughts. But like, I think UMass is still not there in terms of just like the level of like avidity and intensity of in number of fans. And they suffer a little bit from the Mullins is a great hockey arena, but it's a little too big for college hockey.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you. And that's a good segue, because I do have them as the middle of the road in my tier list as well. They're the sole occupants of B tier. So they're number 6 out of 11. I will preface this by saying it's very, very difficult for me to fairly rate UMass, because it is a place where I've seen, you know, literally dozens and dozens of probably at this point. And it is just kind of, you know, you can't look at it without maroon colored glasses. And that goes both ways. I mean, we're going to see faults about it that, you know, somebody visiting for the first time isn't going to see either.
So here's my question about you. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's definitely, you know, a solid place to see a game, especially now that the atmosphere is back. I will say, you know, we did have a period of sustained success in the past, not quite to the extent, obviously, of the Frozen Four in the national championship game, but when John Quick was here, when I first started out, you know, they would sell that place out for the BC and BU games each year, and you know, attendance was actually pretty good. Student interest was high, and they were, because they were good for a couple of years in a row, not great but good, they actually the attendance didn't drop off until they were bad for a few years in a row.
Well, and so the I other thing
that's what they're building towards here,
the other thing that like UMass will always benefit from is their huge student turnouts, because they're often Friday and Saturday night games against peer schools. Like, I think that's even, I don't know, it just feels like it's almost like I would the experiment I would always love to do is to see UMass basketball in the equivalent of Hockey East with the same national relevance as Hockey East. So, like, basically you're saying UMass basketball in the AAC, in the ACC with, but North Carolina and Duke are within an hour of campus. I mean, so it's sort of a preposterous scenario. But I always would love to see, you know, because people are like, oh, students love hockey games and don't come to basketball. It's like, well, show me a basketball game at 7 p.m. against, like, a top 10 team, and, like, I guarantee you, you'll bang the place out. You know, I mean, that's why it's always a little apples to oranges. But my one question, the criticism, it seems, of UMass, and I'm curious to get your take on this, is UMass is relatively new to the sport, or not new, but there was a hiatus where the program wasn't around. They weren't there for the first decade of Hockey East. They joined in like 94. And there's a perception, rightly or wrongly, that, or this is what it seems like on Twitter and following you guys, that UMass fans are kind of this rabid zoo rats who don't understand the sport and are just drunks and are, you know, miserable to be around, and that if you're a visiting fan coming to the Mullen Center, there's a hostility that you'll catch, and that the hostility is not born out of like the fun rivalry hostility, but just born out of like drunk kids who go to hockey games and like, you know, sneak in nips and don't actually care about the outcome. I think a lot of that will change now with the success of the team. But do you think there's any truth to those? First of all, does that perception exist, or am I making it up? And secondly, is there any truth to it?
Yeah, to both, honestly. And I'll just, I mean, I think it's overblown. And I think there are, I think that happens everywhere. And from our experience, we've seen good and bad fans at all 11 arenas. So it's very difficult to separate that part out from, you know, the whole perception that UMass in general is like a, you know, a party school, a rowdy place where everybody's drunk and, you know, academics, or in this case, athletics, aren't the focus. It's just getting wasted. You know, we saw some of that chirping coming from people at the TD Garden games last year.
Yeah, that was a big one.
Yeah, we had those, you know, even the BU fans in the arena were like, oh, I'm going to root for BC, except UMass fans are so bad that I'm going to now just root for nobody. And it's, you know, there's some validity to anything like that. Of course, it's not born out of nothing, but I think it is overblown. And I don't necessarily think that it's because UMass is a newcomer to Hockey East, per se. I think it's just more about the school's general perception, and the way some of the more vocal fans do kind of tend to carry themselves in those kind of settings.
More vocal, not, or like, it's like,
I've heard maybe not people... more vocal, but more like drunk. I guess the people who make a scene, make a scene. You know what I mean?
So that's like, I would imagine the vibe of UMass fans at, let's say, the TD Garden for the Hockey Semis is actually sort of shockingly different than the vibe of UMass fans at Northeastern in a big Hockey East regular season game, just in the sense that, like, there's a certain tier of UMass fan who's, like, particularly casual and whose whole embrace of, like, institutional identity is based on partying 20 years earlier. And so those are the people, and many of them are great, and they show, and they're, but those are the people who would show up to like a Hockey semifinal at like a major venue. And whereas the people who go to Northeastern on a Tuesday are people who give a shit about UMass hockey as a product and not just like, you know, throwing on like their UMass pride for an abstract like ideal of 20 years ago, that, and without giving a fuck about the actual outcome of the game. So I feel like you have to break down the UMass fans into those, like, there's kind of buckets, there's crossover, obviously, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%. I think that does happen, and fairly or unfairly, I think those perceptions are born out of that long running stereotype. It's you know, as much as the school has, and you could do a whole podcast about this, I'm sure, if you probably have, about the way that the school is, you know, perceived as a whole, amongst its peers and amongst people who grew up or had their parents grow up with the idea that, you know, UMass was ZUMass and a place where, you know, only the cretins of the state go. So,
well, I always think, my take is always, like, there are many ZUMasses, you know, like, and, like, yeah. Some of them are great. ZUMass itself is not monolithic, you know? There's, like, different types of partiers, you know what I mean? And I think it's, like, the relatively small subset of just, like, assholes who get too drunk exists everywhere, but you kind of combine that with people's, you know, wanting to chirp at you. And I would imagine it's actually extraordinarily similar to the same pockets of kids at UNH or maybe not UVM because it's a little more stoner vibe, but like, actually, is there, like, who's the UConn, I guess. I hate to say it because I hate UConn, but that's probably the closest analog to UMass fans to some degree.
Well, I wouldn't know because they won't schedule us in any sports. But
all right, let's get to the middle. So what are we in now? Like the B tier?
So that was B tier. UMass was B tier. So there are five schools left.
UMass stands alone in B tier.
That is correct.
Want to take a quick break and plug our sponsors. You know, we've been talking about moving tonight. And, well, we're not talking about moving. We're talking about road tripping, really. But if you are moving, or if you're just road tripping to somewhere temporarily for a short period of time or for several years, there's no better way to do that than with a world-class moving service based in the Pioneer Valley. Five College Movers, fivecollegemovers.com, stress-free moving in the Pioneer Valley and beyond. Whether you're going to Merrimack, don't really know why you'd want to move there, Burlington, great spot to move. Orono, or even, Chestnut Hill. Damn, I couldn't nail that. I was like, where's BC? Because it's like always the joke that it's not in Boston. Any of those places, Five College Movers will get you there. Check them out, fivecollegemovers.com. Thanks again for sponsoring the show.
I've now learned that you're a UMass, a fan of Songus Arena in Lowell, and I've heard it's a nice arena, and I've heard there's good beer options, and I've heard there's a budding brewery scene in the, you know, evolving post-industrial Lowell. Mm-hmm. But I still refuse to believe that you can rank Lowell higher than fifth, and here's why. I know the school has improved dramatically in the last 10 to 15 years. And I know that the city has improved. But as far as I know, it is still, at least substantially, a commuter school. And Lowell, no matter how good it's gotten, is still not in the same tier of cities as Burlington and Boston, because we haven't said BU yet. I can't, in good conscience, rank UMass Lowell any higher than fifth.
Yeah, so on my original tier list that I tweeted out, and I think I've gone back on this in my head, they are part of A tier, along with BU. And I would actually, I think I will put BU at four and Lowell at five. And
okay.
Lowell, so here's the thing with Lowell. We've talked about this before, ease of access and concourses and like some of these like things that just are convenience factors for us are definitely factors at Lowell. Lowell is across, you know, the Songa Center is across the street from Lowell Beer Works. It has its own garage. It has the open concourse. It's relatively easy to get to. So those are all positive things. And you're right about the downtown. The revitalization has taken place. You know, obviously it's still Lowell, so there's still parts of it you don't want to walk through. But overall, I mean, the biggest perk for Lowell, frankly, is there is actually a really great student atmosphere there. And I don't know where these students are coming from or if half of them don't even go there. But they pack that place. They don't, and their student section is kind of this like nebulous, like almost sort of like ours before we like moved it to the end zone. So behind one of the nets, there was a time when it extended from like the side of the net around, so, like just kind of took up the corner. That's when we were there. And you know, there's no like rhyme or reason to it, but they're loud and they're intense and they're angry all the time, which, you know, actually lends itself to being kind of fun. Their band is,
and do they know the sport?
Yeah. I wouldn't believe that they would be able to figure it out, but, they actually get into the sport. They're knowledgeable enough. They have chance, and on top of all that, I mean, they do have a pretty dedicated local fan base as well. And this
is there
the
a minor league hockey team in Lowell?
I don't think they do anymore.
Unless it's below like the ECHL, no.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think they're there anymore.
Because that makes so that's it would the make draw. Sense then that there'd be so good locals. Yeah. And like they have the Lowell Spinners, which I feel thing. Like go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, here's the other thing is, out of any of the schools that we play, I think they hate UMass the most.
That's real.
Fun.
That's real.
That is fun. Actual, genuine hate. And yeah, exactly. It's actually fun. We never ever win there these days, which is the only reason I don't, you know, enjoy it more. And the other thing that I will say is the reason it's fallen for me a little bit in the rankings is because now you can get... It used to be they had Little Beer Works on tap in the arena, and that was new. Like, half the arenas didn't even sell beer, let alone, like, craft beer. So that was a huge perk for Lowell. That's no longer kind of a unique thing. So for that, I dropped them to 5, but still absolutely a must visit it.
You were
saying about the Spinners.
Oh, you fuck that. That's not important. I have this theory I have this theory. Fuck the Lowell Spinners.
That's the takeaway.
Imagine someone just getting like really fired up and just like emphatically pissed about like Penn League single A ball. It's just like I've been with the Hudson Valley Renegades since I was born. Fuck the Lowell Spinners. Is the Hudson Valley Renegades still a thing, Bennett?
Yeah, they might have changed their name, but that sounds right.
Because when I was a kid, if you're a Western Mass kid, it's extremely Pittsfield Mets energy at Wakona Park. That's what you do. You go to Wakona Park once a year. If you're from Hampshire County, it's like an hour to Pittsfield. Maybe you hit the Champion Outlet. And you go to a game at Wakona Park, and the teams would be the Hudson Valley Renegades, the Lowell. At that time, I think they might have just been the Lowell Red Sox. And then the other squads in that league. Oh, dude, this is the real throwback. The Vermont Expos.
What?
The single A affiliate for the Montreal Expos in Burlington.
Oh, damn.
Dude, now it's all about the Valley Blue Sox.
No, that's...
ECBL till like, I die.
No, but dude, that's summer college baseball. I'm talking like legit minor league.
I'm only saying that because I used to work in that league.
Who else was in the... Who else was in that league? Who's in the New York Penn League is what it was called. Oh, like the Williamsport somebody. There was a team in like central PA. And then there was a team like in like Erie, like the Erie something. And maybe like there was some other like upstate New York team, like, oh, the Oneonta somebody and like the Batavia.
I'm looking it up now. There were 400 teams because it's minor league baseball.
I remember when the Oneonta something were in the New York Penn League.
that should be the opener. I mean,
no,
the Oneonta Red Sox, Tigers, and Yankees.
Can we go?
Fuck the little spinner.
Wait, most important, the Olean A's were in this. Ooh.
Oh, can no.
Can we put the fuck the little spinners in the intro to the show, period, forever?
can you just say it one more time so I get a clean cut of it?
You know what? Fuck the little spinners.
Right. Tremendous.
Okay, so
this is tremendous content, by the way.
Yeah, here's what I was going to say about my day tomorrow is going to be miserable. But here's what I was going to say about UMass Lowell and UMass. Those two institutions, I think, and I'm sure there's data that bears this out, but basically since the recession, both those schools have been like on a super upward trajectory from 2008 because people were just like, why the fuck would I go to, I mean, it's one thing, I guess, to go to like BC. It still has a certain national prestige. I don't really think it's all that significant, but it's like, why would you pay like $30,000 or $40,000 to go to Merrimack? Like that's actual criminality. And like, if like Bernie or Liz Warren or whoever wins with like free state colleges, Merrimack may not be in Hockey East anymore because they may not exist as an institution. But my point is that, you know, BC, BU, those schools stick around, but all of the like, anyone who's like considering going to even a pretty good, we talked about this on the Rutgers episode, actually, even like on a pretty, just like a pretty good private school, it just wouldn't make sense now because Lowell and UMass have become so much better regarded in the last 10 to 15 years. And I think what I'm getting at here is that long term, that UMass, we may not like to admit this because it's like Lowell, you know, little brother, whatever, but long term, UMass Lowell v. UMass, and no, I'm not going to say Amherst, 20 years from now, basketball too, like that could be a really legitimate rivalry. And we may not like to admit that, but I mean, John F. Kennedy, not that John F. Kennedy, but the John F. Kennedy who donated the Champion Center for basketball is also a Lowell grad. And like, so there's, and then
you don't say,
and then Marty Meehan, the president of the UMass system, was the president of UMass Lowell. And so like, there's a lot of high level people in the state who understand that it's good for both those schools to thrive academically and athletically. And it's good that I think the continued thing there is a fun dynamic. And especially for the diehards that like, it's a fun thing. And I'm glad it's going to keep going. All right. Let's go to the top tier. I'm shocked that Orono.
We skipped BU.
here's the thing.
Yeah,
I've been to that arena. I actually saw them clinch the 2011, whatever league they were in. It wasn't there in a Patriot League now for hoops, but at the time, I think they were still in the America East. And Aganis was very new. And I really like the vibe there. It's a great arena. They have great tradition for college hockey. They've got a lot of jersey wearers. Their fans seem kind of annoying, but there's a critical mass of them that care and a critical mass of alums who stick around and continue to care. And I remember taking a tour at BU in high school, and even like the admissions guy who gave the presentation was like touting hockey. That school is too big for hockey to be like Texas football or something, but it's the only game in town on campus, and they have a great tradition in Jack Parker. And I know they've had their, you know, off the ice legal theatrics with players and whatnot, but that's a solid, unique Boston tradition, and they have a beautiful arena. And though they're a little bit stuffy and it's sufferable, it's a night in Boston on Comm Ave in a good arena, and it's sort of just like, it's obviously what it is.
Wow, I couldn't have said it better myself. Aganis, I mean, I got into college hockey rooting for BU. My buddy's dad worked for the school, and that's how we got tickets. And you know, we used to go to games at Walter Brown, which is their little rinky-dink little arena that they still use for the women's team and for practice.
What was that like, by the way?
Like a much nicer Merrimack. Okay. Felt like you were in a basement, but there was actually charm to it. They, you know, the students in the band really are what do it at BU. I would say, along with Lowell, the best band in Hockey East, and they actually have a wide variety of unique chants that they do. You know, it's a lot more participatory. It's a lot less, you know, I think of all of the schools, their fans are probably the most into the game.
Yeah.
Which is great, obviously. And again, this is a Palace. It's probably the nicest arena in Hockey East. Best, I would say, you know, there's still three ahead. But it's,
they did a really nice job of that.
To see a game.
Because it's beautiful. Like, it really is. 7,000?
Yeah, I think it's like, yeah, like six or seven, between six and seven, maybe.
It almost reminded
so it's
me.
Small enough.
Yeah, wait, how many seats, sir?
I think it's between six and seven. I could be wrong on that.
So, like, it almost reminded me of, like, a mini Boston Garden or something, TD Garden. You know, it has, like,
yeah.
But it's, like, it's perfect for what it is. You know, it's just a real, and it's built into like the cityscape really well. It just like fits the neighborhood, and it's a ode to a national power college hockey program at a school where they don't give a shit about any other sports. And that's a cool thing. Like, to be in a major city and have the only athletic thing that anyone cares about on campus be college hockey is just like unto itself cool.
I totally agree, and again, it's one of those places too now where there's just like last year you go and it's not quite as, you know, their fans still show up. So even though their season was just about as shitty as BC's, it was more like 60-40 UMass fans to BU fans last year. So it wasn't quite as much of a takeover, and they definitely were vocal on Twitter about not talk about our fans, you know. Endearing
BU
themselves
Twitter,
to the locals.
Oh, well, that BU hockey Twitter, I feel like it's Twitter. BU hockey Twitter strikes me as like the most robust Hockey East Twitter base.
The diehard fans and the students, actually, like the student section fans, like the official accounts, they're militia basically, are actually really cool. We have befriended. They're probably the first opposing fan base that we've befriended people in, and we actually like went to parties and you know, got pretty close with, and we still like chat with the BU people. They're the people who are actually like diehards are really fun to talk to, and you know, really chill. They get it, you know, they empathize with us in ways that I think most fan bases would be more dismissive about.
Well, and BU has like
so contrary though to like their general student like population, which has that disdain that we talked about, but
yeah,
the diehards
but I'll
are
say
really
this
great.
I'll say this for BU, it's a kind of strange school in that there's a ton of people. There's like 15,000 undergrads. It's gotten like pretty tough to get into, and it's really insanely overpriced and expensive, and yet,
I almost went there.
Yeah, same. And yet, like, they aren't nearly as big of assholes as BC. And school is, like, BC fans will hate this, but, like, in terms of, and I can cite a fairly large sample size, everyone I know who's graduated from BU is basically just as, you know, kind of, the only thing that BC people tend to have is a little bit more family wealth. Like, they're, and tend to be bigger assholes. So, like, BC likes to think they're in this tier by themselves, and it's like, not really. You're both in Boston, and the BU people are just a little more chill, I think. And they don't like, BC has this weird school pride where they have this like deep sense of pride in themselves, and yet like don't support their institution. Whereas like BU is like people who are just like pretty chill and not like dickheads and don't really like have a institutional bond except through like this weird thing that is called college hockey. And for some reason, I just respect that. I can't really articulate what I'm trying to say. It's getting late, but like,
no.
I fuck with the vibe.
that's a fair assessment of it, and I think I'm gonna have some pushback. I can already see the tweets coming back at me being like, what are you talking about? BU fans are just as bad, if not worse. That hasn't been my experience, but I do think there are definitely some of them out there that can be
I think has a little of that UMass thing where there's just sort of, if you were to give me the archetype of every person, like the sort of prototypical person of each of these institutions, I think UMass and BU have the widest variance. Like BC, we all know.
I think that's fair.
You know, like everybody knows the BC guy. Like,
oh my God. No, yeah,
that's, you know what I mean? Like, so fucking and like Lowell even like has a certain like vibe. Like it's just like,
I just picture Ryan Lambert, frankly. But
who's Ryan Lambert?
The two-line pass guy. Who's didn't you go back and forth with him on Twitter?
He's that guy. Yeah. I don't know. I just take your cue and talk shit, and it's like I'm totally ill-informed, and like there's no consequences for me because I don't care about hockey.
That's a good point.
So okay, so now I'm shocked, and I gotta take a shit.
Top
so
three.
To wrap this up.
S tier. All right, we're getting there.
Okay, I am stunned, frankly, that Orono is in the top three. Burlington, great town. Haven't been since I was like 7. My dad swam Lake Champlain when I was like 6 or 7, and I loved it up there. And I just tell people like, yeah, Burlington's a great town. But I genuinely have not been there since I was 7 years old. And but I have plenty of friends who went to UVM. I almost went to UVM. Like, I will go up to Burlington for a weekend. I feel like I know the vibe. It's cool. It's like hippy dippy, but like there's still like a lot going on, and it's like good energy. It's Vermont. That's a no-brainer. I get that. And Vermont hockey has had some interesting history. They were in the ECAC for a while, but they also have some like national history where they made the Final Four back in the day, or Frozen Four back in the day. So like I get that. And they probably have like diehard local fans. It's not that big of an arena. It's a cool vibe, whatever. And what's the other one that I'm missing besides Northeastern? And Northeastern I get, because everybody talks about, they have this old barn. It looks really cool, super old. They have like their fans on their students are on the top row. It's like, gets really loud in there. It's like, it's a cool energy. They have a little bit of that BU tradition thing going on, but with a little bit more of a chip on their shoulder because they don't have quite the historic success of BU or BC. I do not understand Orono. I know they have an amazing tradition. It's in the middle of nowhere. But, like, everyone says going to Orono is just hell on earth. Do you like it ironically, or do you actually, like, and is it the camaraderie that it brings out because you've traveled, like, 72 hours into, like, hermit land, northern Maine? Or is it actually, like, a genuinely fun place to watch a hockey game?
Yeah, that's, well, so we'll get to Orono in a second. I'll just really quickly, and at this point we're splitting hairs about the rankings. So all these top three, you can pretty much interchange them, but just for the sake of having comparison, I did put Vermont third. They play at Gutterson Fieldhouse, which is one of the cathedrals of college hockey. These three are all like, not just in Hockey East, but I'd say like in college hockey as a whole, are all known as cathedrals of the game. So the gut, it's an old wooden barn. I mean, it's got this like unique layout where most of the seats are in the two end zones, and the students all kind of stand right on top of the goalie. It's a really unique setup. We've seen some good UMass games there, which doesn't hurt the perception. And obviously Burlington's a pretty awesome place to go to drink beer, and you can walk right into downtown from the arena, so that's a huge plus. It is kind of just as far as Maine, actually. For most people coming up, I guess from Amherst it's a little closer. From Boston, it's pretty much splitting hairs, but Vermont number three. Great atmosphere, great band, great fans, great uniforms. Like everything about that trip is sensational. And they are playing Vermont. The way it works with Vermont and Maine is they only do one or the other each year. So this year they go to Vermont. Last year they went to Maine. So you get a chance to do that road trip, just speak.
Is that a back-to-back night still? There.
Yeah, so they'll do two nights. So they'll do Friday, great. Saturday. Yeah, so you can go up there. I mean, yeah, it's tough to get up there for the Friday game without taking the day off, obviously, but you can go up there for the Saturday and then spend some time. It's really a great place to eat and drink and, you know, vote for Bernie. And then number two is Orono. And I think you did hit the nail on the head there. It is the most remote arena, you know, again, by a little bit more than Vermont. But you do feel like you're just in the middle of nowhere. That being said, it's another one of those barns that, you know, it's got the, like, angular roofs or, you know, roof panels. It's got, you know, a balcony. It's got amazing student fans who will come out no matter what the team's doing.
Mario Ferraro just got an assist. Anyways, go back to what you're doing.
Well, there you go.
Shouts to Mario.
Shout outs to Super Mario. We could have used him last night. But good for him. I'm glad he's crushing it in the NHL. But back to Orono. Part of the trip is you go through Portland, and I know it's not the same city, and I know I just earlier in the same countdown said that the different neighborhoods in Providence disqualified them, but now a city that's like 2 hours away is like worth visiting, but it's true because you have to go through it pretty much to get up there. And yeah, I mean, Orono has a brewery now. It has actually a couple breweries, believe it or not, both very good. And again, Alphand Arena is just such a cool place to see a game. You feel like, you know, you see the history, they have all the trophies and you know, all the different people who have played for them over the years.
Do they still pack the place even though they haven't been good for a while?
Yeah. I mean, it's so not to the extent that they used to. I know that it used to be just like sellouts after
what's
sellout.
What's his name? Like, Paul Kariya. I mean, they were like dynastic.
Yeah. For many years. And of course, it's the only thing to do up there. So they do draw pretty well, even now that they're not so great. They're coached by Red Gendron, who, of course, longtime assistant at UMass. So it's good to see him up there, although I hear he's on thin ice as far as his job's concerned. But I mean, they still have all these traditions. They have, you know, they have baked potatoes for sale in the concourse. There's all these like kind of weird quirky things that make it and you just feel like you did something uniquely, like, I don't know, unique to the hockey fandom making that trip all the way up there. So it is definitely one of those bucket list things, but not number one on my list.
Here's my question about Orono though. Do you think that you're somewhat biased because you recently went for the first time? Is there a recency bias?
I didn't recently go for the first time. I've been up there three times now.
Oh, really?
My first time was like 4 or 5 years ago, yeah.
Was it Max's first time then?
I'm Max.
I mean, sorry, was it Matt's first time?
I don't think it... No, I...
Oh, all right. In that case, totally legit. And then, okay, so go now. Break it down. You take me to Northeastern now.
Yeah, Northeastern number one. It's just got back from there last night, which is
number
timely.
One, that shocks.
Number
me.
One. Well, it's the oldest arena in the world. The oldest still operating hockey arena in the world.
And basketball.
And
by
they
the
have.
Way.
Oh, there you go.
Although, actually, I think Rose Hill at Fordham has been around longer, but keep going.
Yeah, a place that I evidently don't remember exists.
we had a fun time.
No,
there.
Matthews.
We went to a brewery.
That's true. So Matthews Arena, definitely number one for me, just because atmosphere, location, pregame scene, it ticks all the boxes, really. They have the doghouse, which is their student section that sits in the balcony directly over the goalie, which is kind of a unique thing in and of itself. Maine has something sort of similar to that, but it's just the way they do it at Northeastern with the band and just the way the building looks. It's kind of hard to describe without actually being there. But last night kind of confirms that they are still number one. However, what I will say is their new video board and kind of the gimmicks that they're throwing in there almost are work in their detriment. I just feel like they haven't ruined the vibe just yet, but it is a little more modern than it used to be, and there's just something that's not quite as special as I remember from my first few times going to this venue. But still, number one for me, a must visit, a cathedral of the game. Just an absolutely amazing place to see it. And they, I'd say after LOL, their fans are probably second angriest about UMass in Hockey East. I think it's just because we've played them so closely over the years. And, you know, we have this camaraderie about the fact that both fan bases hate BU and BC. So they're a little bit more on equal footing. This recent success-wise, they're pretty similar. It just feels like there is a little bit more animosity between, I guess, both the teams and the fan bases. And so they really, really get into it. And there's always a good UMass section there, but we don't actually seem to ever take over the building the way we do at BU and BC. And that lends itself well to a really fun rowdy atmosphere.
In fairness, have we taken over the building at BU until, like, last year?
Yeah. Oddly enough, I feel like even during the down years, our turnout on the road has been pretty good at those buildings. Most of it at BC is because if 1,000 UMass fans show up, that's like half of the building. But because they just do not draw against, you know, teams that they perceive as inferior. But I do think that it is definitely more recent that we're taking over the way that we have, for sure. But relatively speaking, I do think that Northeastern draws very well against us, and that means that
the building is rocking. What is that place? 3,500?
I think it's like it's under 4,000, yeah, for sure.
Go ahead. Well, so the thing that intrigues me about Northeastern in particular is, to the best of my knowledge, have they haven't won like a national title, right?
Right. It's funny you mentioned that, because last night they were chirping all day long on Twitter with our fans. And then especially last night, somebody yelled over the banner, or over the anthem singer, a Northeastern fan yelled something about participation banners and trophies, making fun of the fact that we have a national finalists banner, as if any school wouldn't do that. But also, they have a 1982 Frozen Four banner, and that is their one appearance in the Frozen Four. And it was 5 years before I, an old person, was born. So, shut up. Shut the fuck up, sit down.
That's whack. They're a little bit of like, they've made a lot of tournaments, right? Like, and not done
they anything. Have made more tournaments. Yeah, they've definitely had more recent success, or more sustained success, even if it wasn't at the highest level. They still make it to tournaments. They won Hockey East, conference tournament last year. So they are, you know, reasonably successful to the point where they have some chirping points. But I don't think that the gap between them and us is as wide as the historical gap you could look at between us and the BUs and BCs of the world that have, you know, many national championships under their belt. I like the even footing, I think, really gives that atmosphere a little bit of an extra, a little spiciness.
My thing with Northeastern that where I'm surprised, and I'm not going to allow it to be number one based on, you know, as obviously my very highly informed opinion, is that the institutional profile of Northeastern, I feel like, is bizarro world, because Northeastern, like not very long ago, 25 years ago, maybe a little longer, was like just like it was basically a bad UMass Lowell. It was like a commuter school you know, you take some night classes if you're in Boston and whatever. Then it started getting pretty good around the time I was going to college. Like, they, you know, everybody wanted to move into the city in like 2004, 2005. And it became like, then I've learned recently that Northeastern in the last like 5, 6, 7 years has in part, like, because of a surge of, apparently like a huge surge of like students from mainland China, but in part just because it's gotten really good, has become like insanely difficult to get into and is like fucking like the Harvard, I don't want to say Harvard, but it's like maybe even harder to get into than like BC or, you know, I mean, it's gotten like crazy academic all of a sudden. I think the recession, or that's maybe the theory of what somebody's saying, was that like they had that 5-year program where you like get a job or whatever automatically. So it's like, it had a surge in academic prestige, like, because people were just like thinking in those terms. So,
yeah,
but it had before that kind of like a fun, grittier, like blue collar Boston vibe. And then it very quickly transitioned to like, and I just wonder sometimes, especially in a city with so much hockey, like how that affects, like how, who is the, I don't have a sense of who the kind of like Northeastern fan is. I have a sense of that with pretty much all the other schools in the league. Who fucks with Northeastern hockey?
They have a pretty good diehard subset. Kind of reminds me a little bit of us, to be honest. We met up with, during one of the intermissions, we met the NU hockey blog crew, and it was kind of like looking into a mirror, to be honest. They were, you know, similarly outfitted in their jerseys, and you know, they graduated a little bit more recently, but you know, they were talking about all the road trips they had planned. They made it out to Amherst for the first time last year. So there are definitely the diehards. I do still get the sense that the hockey fans there are a little bit more of the blue collar. They're not, you know, it's not the same as going to a BC or BU game. They're just more into things.
Is that locals though? Or is it like, I guess when you go to a place like Northeastern, if there's 3,500 yeah. people that the place seats and like, it's a Tuesday night game last night, let's say there's 500 UMass fans. I don't know. I'm making this up. The place didn't look totally full. So let's say there's 3,000 people there. So let's say there's 2,800 people there. I don't know. Let's say, I don't know, 2,000 of them are Northeastern fans. What percentage of those are students? What percentage of those are like season ticket holders? And what percentage of those are just kind of like stragglers, like, you know, checking out what's in the neighborhood?
I think more than most schools, they get a pretty high percentage of their turnout from the students specifically.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Again, cause it's really the only sport on campus. I mean, they have their basketball teams on the rise, I guess, but you know, there's no football team there. You know, hockey's the big draw, and it was unfortunate that they schedule a Tuesday 7 o'clock game, in October. Cause like you said, that not many locals, and it looked pretty empty on TV and looked even worse in person, frankly. Even the UMass section was like maybe 100, 200 or so. But, you know, on a typical game, so last year, for instance, they sold out against us and did draw a lot of diehards, a lot of casual local fans of both schools, I think. But overall, I do get the sense that they don't have quite as much of the alumni fan turnout
campus, right? I mean, it's right in the city.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that makes it pretty cool. I work in
again. You know, it's like you can kind of. Do you work in downtown Boston?
I work in Cambridge, but I worked out of our Boston office last night, and I walked over a 20-minute walk from Newbury Street, so pretty easy to get to. And like there's 2 Orange Line stops, you know, within like a 5-minute walk. So a very convenient.
How far is Salem from downtown Boston?
A half hour on a commuter or a 45-minute drive. Well, we lost Sage. He died. my takes were just too hot for them. But this has been fun.
So yeah, my phone died right as we were wrapping up, and I just want to thank Max again for his tremendous contribution. I want to apologize if I was a little rambly, because I was really just speculating recklessly, and I hope you enjoyed the episode. Check him out on Twitter, Fight Mass. Probably find, wait, I guess you can't find the old blog, but it was fun. Anyway, thanks again to Max. Thanks again to Five College Movers, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Hit us up on Twitter as always, and we will be back soon.